Good morning. I played baseball throughout my childhood. It was the only varsity sport I played in high school. This was my senior year of baseball hat. Yeah. The 7 1/8 doesn't really fit anymore. Either the hat shrunk or my head got larger, I don't really know. Or more hair. It's more hair now. Thank you, Pastor. We got you next week when you get up here. But one of the things that a teammate of mine did was he wrote a scripture verse underneath the bill of his cap. And I was like, that seems like a good idea, a trendy way to show off my Christianity. And, you know, hopefully an encouragement to me throughout the season. So beneath the bill is my nickname in high school, Bear, my number 19, and two verses, one of which I didn't remember until yesterday when I got the hat out of the basement that was even on here. But one I've remembered over the past 27 years since I wrote it. Proverbs 14:23, written in Sharpie here 27 years later. All hard work brings a profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. You know, for baseball, right? That was what we were talking about here. Because anyone can talk a good game, can boast about how they hit the ball hard in the batting cages, or how they can throw the ball on a straight line from center field to the catcher without it bouncing. But just talking about it without putting in the work will only lead to poverty of individual and team success on the baseball field. Whereas if you grind, you spend time in the batting cages until those hands are bleeding, you are out there shagging fly balls for hours. In our case, they had us on this super treadmill that would get up to like 40-degree angles and sprinting on it to try to increase our speed and our agility. If you do those things, it'll lead to profit. You'll see a return on your investment, a return on your hard work, because all hard work brings a profit. But mere talk leads only to poverty. Right? I mean, that's what I scribbled on my hat. What about for you growing up? Like, who modeled what working hard even looked like? Who comes to mind? And what did they do that formed some of your early impressions of what working hard meant? In my case, several family members stand out. My mom was a nurse. She worked night shift when we were kids for a portion of time. Why? So she could be present with us during the day. That's not easy, working all night long from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. and then trying to be present during the day because somebody's got to sleep at some point. My mom worked hard. My dad, I don't really know what he did as a commercial lines person at Continental Insurance downtown, but I believed as a kid he worked hard. It seemed like he worked hard, whatever that meant. And then I watched my parents on weekends, you know, working in the yard. I remember that too. But for me, the person who comes to mind probably strongest is my grandfather. We called him Pop-Pop. And I would hear stories from Pop-Pop or about Pop-Pop about how he would lie about his age to enlist for World War II. I heard stories about how as a baseball player, he would work on his curveball and pitching. So much so, one story is my favorite where my grandmother would put on the catching mitt, get on down and help him as he was working hard to pursue his dream to play in the major leagues. He earned himself a tryout. He worked so hard. Didn't make it, but he earned himself that tryout. And I remember how, like, he would walk with a hunch and his back was crooked from the decades he spent working hard in the factory in rural Pennsylvania where they lived. But even as he got older, I saw it with my own eyes. He would be in his workshop where the sawdust just continued to pile, where he was always working with his hands to craft something beautiful or bring something that was discarded back to life. He was an amazing carpenter. Even in his mid-70s, there was a time I went out to rural Pennsylvania and was helping fix something on their chimney. In his mid-70s, he was up there with me. Into his 80s, mowing the lawn for hours, gardening, and still using his hands to make beautiful things. Pop-Pop worked hard. He was not a mere talker. But in his case, it didn't lead to profit, at least not financial profit or material profit. In their home, there was no indoor plumbing until my dad turned 13. They literally lived in a barn, as my grandfather had converted the second level of a barn into their apartment where they lived for 6 decades. He died in his early 90s. He outlived my grandmother, and there really wasn't much financially left behind. And I would imagine in our own lives or those around us, we've seen stories like this play out, whether for a time or a season or for decades, where you put in the work or you saw someone else you love put in the work. You just didn't have that return. It didn't. All work brings about profit. Didn't seem to be the case. So is the proverb untrue, or should we interpret it differently through a spiritual lens? All hard work brings about spiritual profit, and mere talk leads only to spiritual poverty. I don't really think that's what the author of Proverbs was intending. You know, this proverb is in line with other proverbs that talk about physical, material benefits. In this case, that word profit comes from the Hebrew word mowetar, which I don't know Hebrew, but as I read and studied it, means abundance. One description was even preeminence. And many English translations do choose the word profit. I found this to be helpful. An Old Testament scholar named Tremper Longman, he studied here at Ohio Wesleyan, eventually at Yale. He wrote this: biblical proverbs are not always true because they're not meant to be universally valid. Proverbs are principles, not promises. And then he goes on to say, they are intended to describe how living in a certain way can lead to a flourishing life, but they're not meant to be unbreakable promises from God. If you've been here throughout the sermon series, you've heard things like this from Pastor Rich and from Pastor Micah as we've been preaching on different proverbs. Proverbs are principles, not promises. Yes, we should work hard, and we should encourage others to work hard too, and hard work can lead to profit or abundance or preeminence even. And it really should. It's a principle of God. But in our workplaces, and as we talk about workplaces this morning, however you define that, whether that is the workplace where you and others around you are paid to provide a good or a service, or you are, you know, a volunteer in some sort of not-for-profit context, you're a student in a school, that is your work for now, or you work in the home. Whatever your workplace is, conditions get in the way. Conditions of our workplaces get in the way of making this proverb true as often as we might hope. Because in our workplaces, hard work and results that come from hard work, sometimes they get overlooked. You're working hard, those around you are working hard. People aren't seeing it, they aren't appreciating it. Doesn't always lead to a promotion or pay raise. And in some people's professions, one's salary and promotion opportunities aren't even connected to how hard you work, aren't even connected to your results, and are solely based on things like how many years have you been on the job. And in some of these workplaces, not sure about yours, but mere talkers might even retain their jobs, despite not really accomplishing much at all and just talking. Or even worse, mere talkers are so good at talking, particularly to the right people who have power, that they end up with the promotions and the pay raises just because of who they know and their ability to persuade. So our big idea for this morning, our main idea, is that in our workplaces, we must create the conditions so that hard work more often leads to profit and leads to abundance. I used to be an educator. I was a teacher. I was an administrator. And I worked at a school here in Columbus called KIPP Columbus. And KIPP Columbus is part of a national network of charter schools across the country. I think there's maybe 200 or so now. And for 20-plus years, KIPP had a mantra across all these schools. And the mantra was, work hard, be nice. A book was written about their journey by a gentleman from D.C. named Jay Matthews, and he chose that as his book title. Because it was more than just one of the slogans of KIPP. It was how teachers were trained. It was emblazoned on walls. It was on swag. Work hard, be nice was synonymous with this movement that KIPP was trying to start. And as somebody who worked there for 5 years, I can say it was hard work as a teacher. I'd never worked so many hours, such intense hours. It was hard. And for those teachers out there, I can also let you know that hard work didn't always bring about a lot of profit. That's for sure. But the mantra wasn't really intended for us as teachers, to be honest. It was intended for students. It was intended for students, and in some ways, it was a bit of a formula. Work hard plus be nice equals success. You do those two things, it's going to bear fruit for you, students. However, 4 years ago in the summer of 2020, when so many aspects of life were being reassessed, particularly connected to the issues of racial justice, KIPP announced they were retiring the mantra. Why? Well, the majority of KIPP students are from marginalized and underrepresented populations, and the majority of students are students of color, from lower-income communities most often. Students who face a slew of systemic barriers and often function in environments where one faces these kind of barriers, working hard plus being nice doesn't always lead to success and isn't enough. And interestingly, Jay Matthews, after they made this decision, he said, and he writes in a newspaper in Washington, D.C., he said, in all my research, I never heard a student or a family complain about this motto. Which I thought was fascinating, because a lot of times when you're in it and you don't have power and you're being told just work hard and be nice, well, that's what I heard, that's what I know, that's what I believe. So, yeah, we didn't have a problem with it. But the challenge is that conditions have to change so that work hard plus be nice has a higher likelihood to lead to success, to lead to profit, to lead to abundance in our workplaces. Now, I'm not naive. In my job, I get exposure to a lot of different kinds of workplaces. Some are healthier, some are completely dysfunctional, and most are somewhere in between. And many of us don't have the roles in the power that comes with those roles to actually create systemic change. We might feel that way in our workplaces. And the place I work, we've created this image, and this image represents over the years what we have heard, what we have seen in organizations when they're trying to do something, and that something faces challenges. We call this the canyon in workplaces. It's chaotic. Might be a little hard to see. But what's going on is up at the leadership, altitude there. You've got leaders with different puzzle pieces, and they all have got their own agenda, and they're trying to lead the organization, but they're doing it from their own perspective. They're not aligned. Managers in the middle. Any middle managers in the house? You feel overworked, torn in different directions, wearing a lot of hats. Feeling like you just have to take what's thrown down to you and then figure out how to do something with it. And then doers, if you notice, the letters there form the word doers in the trenches, just trying to make it. So I'm not sure about you, like if you're a student, maybe you're like, yeah, I'm a doer. If you're a teacher, maybe in the manager, sort of, or you're a grade level chair or something like that. If you're a leader, whether it's a school or of a district, in a workplace that's more like a corporate or in a hospital, or wherever you work, what describes your role? Where do you put yourself? Are you a leader? Are you a manager? Or more of a doer? Because each role contributes to the conditions in the workplace, but certainly leaders have more power. Managers maybe a little less so, and then doers with the least. But no matter where we are, we can create conditions that better align with God's purposes for community and for work. So the things we'll explore next, none of them are going to be magical elixirs where we're just going to like take them or give them to people we work with, and then all of a sudden things are going to feel better in our workplaces. But let's start in Proverbs and let's look at some of what Proverbs says that I think we can apply to create better conditions where hard work can and should lead to profit. First one, stay away from fools. Yeah. Proverbs says a lot about fools. There's also a verse in there that says, don't call anyone a fool. So like some of you might have heard that from your auntie or your grandma, like, don't call anybody a fool. But like Proverbs talks a lot. This stay away from fools is not my words. That's Proverbs 14:7. And then there are many others right here in the same passage where I wrote this 14:23 on my hat. Verse 8, the folly of fools is deception. Mere talkers are good at deceiving. You got to hide the fact that I'm not really doing much of substance, so I'm going to talk a good game. A fool is hot-headed, yet feels secure. So someone who's a mere talker might feel this ability to like get frustrated in the workplace or show some anger, but they feel secure because, you know, I'm protected because of the favoritism perhaps I've been shown. In verse 18, the simple inherit folly. Now, I have worked with a few fools before. I've probably, you know, been perceived to be a fool myself. But in our workplace, I've been fortunate. There's not a long list for me. It's been rare. And I do think that one of the things we've done well in my environment is that when we hire, we go beyond the like puffed out bravado of a resume and the bulleted list of experiences, and we really try to dig a little deeper. Who is this person? What do they value? Are their values aligned with our values? How can we get a sense for how they behave and show up? They might have a nice list of accomplishments on a resume, but are they going to be aligned with our value of authenticity? Are they going to be someone who's authentic? And in our case, we have had some fools fool us in the interview process and maybe get in, but over time, the culture of the organization has weaned a lot of our mere talkers out. So one way to create the conditions where hard work is more likely to lead to profit and abundance is to stay away from fools. A second thing we see in Proverbs, and going outside of Proverbs 14 for this second one, is to give authentic affirmation and authentic coaching. 15:12, mockers resent correction, so they avoid the wise. In chapter 19, stop listening to instruction, my son, and you will stray from the words of knowledge. And then back in chapter 16, gracious words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. For some of us, that last one might hurt a little bit. We might be in workplaces where we don't get gracious words at all. Our soul needs to hear things like that, affirming words that are authentic, because it's sweet to the soul and healing to the bones, and we just don't get it. 30, 40, 50, 60, whatever hours a week you work, all you hear is a correction. And throughout Proverbs, there's this good balance of both correction and instruction, and also gracious words, praise and affirmation. And that should be the case in the workplace too. I'm going to pick a very different kind of workplace, that of a soccer team. So Friday night, got to go with my three sons down to watch the Chelsea and Manchester City soccer training sessions. Anybody else down there for that or see the game yesterday at Ohio Stadium? I'm the only one. Watched on TV? No, nobody likes soccer here. Well, go with me for a little bit. So I love soccer, and I'm fascinated by soccer. I coach soccer for my kids. I'm entering year six of coaching their club soccer team. And I was mesmerized during this training session, particularly Manchester City's. And I was mesmerized by watching their head coach, Pep Guardiola. And he was bringing the pep from the very first moment they walked onto the field. I mean, he huddles the team, and he's, you know, like moving his arms around, and he's giving them instructions, and then they get right into it, and they're going, and they're going. And he's out there. And in this one drill, I videoed portions of it. He is just constantly providing direction. He's constantly providing instruction. He's constantly providing affirmation. I mean, from start to finish. The practice ended, and I was like, boys, look what he's doing now. He was talking with this one player, probably for 3 or 4 minutes. He was like moving his hips in different ways. It was like he was in it. And this is considered probably Manchester City the best team in the world right now. I mean, the number of trophies they win, he's considered by many the best coach in the world. And some of the players on that team, I mean, like they are famous Instagram followers in the, you know, millions and millions. But he's there like pushing them, and he's not like just managing egos. He's creating a workplace culture with this balance of authentic affirmation and coaching, where in their case, their hard work is leading to a lot of profit and a lot of abundance and a lot of successes. And as I watch, there's a reason for that. It's the culture he's created. It's the conditions he's created. Yeah, they've got good players, but so do other teams. What does that look like in our workplaces to provide more authentic affirmation and more authentic coaching? All right, one more thing we can do in our workplaces. Number three, we can create more equitable practices and systems. Proverbs, and really all of Scripture, has a lot to say about this one. I picked three verses. I could have picked like a dozen. Chapter 16, verse 11, honest scales and balances belong to the Lord. In chapter 20, verse 10, differing weights and differing measures, the Lord detests them both. And in chapter 21, verse 3, to do what is right and just is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. This one might be the most challenging depending on your role. So back to the whole doers, managers, and leaders. Doers don't have a ton of influence over the systems in an organization. You know, my oldest, Simeon, he was on an equity council in middle school. As a student, he's probably more of a doer. He had a little bit of influence. He could advocate to leadership, a little bit. Managers might have a little bit more, but they're largely acting within the systems that already exist. And then leaders certainly have the most influence over things like this. Things like, how do we recruit? Where do we recruit? How are we hiring so that it's equitable and fair? What about how we recognize and reward people for their hard work and their performance and don't show favoritism in how we do that? Leaders have a lot more control over things like that. Over the past few years, I can't help myself from going here, there's been an acronym that has gotten all sorts of attention from a lot of people, from Elon Musk to politicians to people at their dinner tables. The acronym is DEI, right? Anybody familiar with that acronym? Diversity, equity, and inclusion. And there are reasons it's created divisiveness. I won't go into all of those. But one letter in particular has been particularly challenged, which is the letter E for equity. And it's, when I think about it though, it's hard for us to argue that we shouldn't seek out equitable and fair workplaces. That seems like something we should be able to agree on. Because when we have equitable and fair workplaces, harder work Better performance should lead to more results. That seems equitable and fair. And when we don't have equitable and fair workplaces, then mere talk and favoritism and unbalanced scales might still lead to profit, still lead to abundance, and that just doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem just. And who would want that? Aside from perhaps those who benefit from favoritism and from unbalanced scales and from inequity. So number three, we can create more equitable practices and more equitable systems. So let's look at all three of these again. In your workplace, again, however you define that, whether that's your home, a school, place of paid employment, a place of unpaid volunteerism, what can you influence? Do you have an influence over who works here? And so can we do better at making sure we don't have mere talkers and fools who make it in and who stay in? Can I be someone who gives more authentic affirmation and authentic coaching? And that doesn't just need to be going this way, but maybe to this way, and maybe even for those who manage me. And then can I influence in some way, shape, or form, whether that's to advocate for changes or to actually be the decision maker to create a more equitable and fair workplace community? Can I influence that? And certainly, we've talked a lot about the word profit and abundance, and yes, there are the material, tangible, but I also believe when we have these kind of workplaces, lead to more fulfilling work, lead to more joy at work, lead to more satisfaction, to thriving workplace communities where hard work does more often lead to profit and lead to abundance. But it's going to take some work, so let's get to work. Because mere talk is not going to cut it. Amen.